At the top of our program today, fishing in Michigan is big business. The state DNR estimates that anglers spent $2.4 billion in trip-related expenses and equipment in 2011. Besides Michigan's Great Lakes and rivers, our inland lakes attract considerable fishing as well. In fact, six Michigan lakes were recently included in a National Fishing Magazine's 100 Best Bass Lakes of 2014 list. Current State's Melissa Benmark talked bass fishing recently with Dr. Mary Tate Bremigan of MSU's Department of Fisheries and Wildlife.
I'm an aquatic ecologist, and I focus also on applying aquatic ecology to fisheries management. And the two main things that I study are, one is very in-lake oriented. I study the reproductive ecology of largemouth bass and how fishing affects that and largemouth bass populations. And I also study lakes in a much broader context of how landscape features and human alterations to the landscape, I study how that affects water quality and fish assemblages. And I have many highly valued collaborators in those projects.
How are Michigan's largemouth bass doing?
I'd say overall, from what we know, Michigan's largemouth bass and smallmouth bass are doing quite well. I can speak the most to the populations in lakes, but they're also in our rivers and they're in the Great Lakes. A couple things we know, or a couple indicators of their health, would be in, when was that? Over 10 years ago, the Fisheries Division changed the minimum size limit for bass. They increased it from 12 inches being the smallest size of bass that could be harvested to 14 inches. And we know from monitoring of lakes that the size structure of bass populations has improved over that time period. And we know they're very popular with anglers in general. We know that, about a quarter of the fishing days in Michigan are directed towards these bass species. And recently, the Bassmasters magazine named, about six Michigan locations as in their top 100 places to bass fish in the nation. And last year, Lake St. Clair was the top of the list, and it's still in the top, somewhere in the top 25. I can't remember the exact number. And that's actually quite a feat given that these bass species and fish species in general, their growth rate is very dependent on water temperature. So when you think of the southern water bodies in our country, they typically have warmer temperatures. They, so to speak, they have a leg up on producing large bass. So the fact that we have this many really highly valued bass fisheries is a really good sign.
Well, I know a lot of the inland lakes have had, at this point, probably all of them have had issues with, for instance, zebra mussel contamination. Have you seen changes related to that?
Two main points I'd like to make about that. In terms of zebra mussels in particular, it's my colleagues that have demonstrated that, Dr. Ace Sarnelli and his lab, for example. And so what they have shown is that if we compare lakes that zebra mussels have invaded to lakes that don't have zebra mussels, it's the relatively low nutrient lakes that appear to be particularly vulnerable to negative effects of zebra mussels on the water quality. And in particular, they've shown that there's a certain type of general type of algae, blue-green algae, which generally are undesirable and which can produce toxins in the water. And those blue-green algae and their toxins generally increase more after zebra mussel invasion in these low-nutrient lakes. And that underlies how complicated it is to really be able to say with confidence, you know, Melissa, here's the health of our inland lakes, because there's so many things about the lakes that we care about: their water quality, the abundance of fish, the size structure of the fish, the genetic integrity of the fish populations, the contaminant loads in the fish, the habitat quality. So there's so many things that we could base that assessment on. And there is so much natural variation among lakes, and we typically lack data from before humans started impacting lakes. So when we're really trying to say, what's our goal for these lakes, how do we balance emphasis on how they used to be, and how do we balance emphasis on how we want them to be now, and how we use them, it becomes incredibly difficult to answer the question, And as a researcher, I focus more on why it's difficult. So it's even harder for me to say, here's how our lakes are. So I think, you know, generally we have amazing aquatic resources in Michigan, but we also know that they are subject to many different anthropogenic stressors. And there's a lot of research going on and a lot of work by, say, the DNR to try to understand that and try to mitigate it.
When we were talking before, when we were setting up this interview, you mentioned some concerns about bass aggressiveness and fishing. And I'm curious if you'd tell our listeners kind of what that's all about.
I would be happy to talk about bass aggression. So largemouth and smallmouth bass, and actually many of their relatives, if you will, a group of species called centrorchids, like bluegill and crappie, they all have a reproductive behavior that involves parental care by the male, which is somewhat out of the ordinary for fish. So in the spring, males gather in the inshore areas of lakes and shallow areas of rivers, and some of these males build nests. You might see sort of an area in a lake shoreline that looks like a bowl has been scooped out, and it looks as though the silt has been moved away, and indeed that has occurred. The male bass, in the case of my research, the male bass constructs this nest. One or more females come and deposit eggs. The female's energy investment is in her calorie-rich eggs. So once her eggs are laid, generally speaking, she leaves. The male invests his energy into reproduction through guarding those offspring. So the eggs, and then the eggs hatch into tiny little larvae a few millimeters long, and they start to grow up into small little fish. And when they're still, say, less than an inch, the male is guarding them and protecting them from predators. And what we generally know is that in the absence of fishing, it's the most aggressive bass that are the best dads. They do the best job of protecting their offspring. But that aggressiveness also makes them more vulnerable to fishing, because our general understanding is that when a fishing lure plops near their nest, their little fishy brain interprets that as a potential nest predator, and they strike at it. And they're captured. So that makes them fun to catch. And so from a management standpoint, we're trying to balance sort of, are we sufficiently protecting these bass populations and the aggressive dads that we know are highly successful in their reproduction? We're trying to balance that with the desires of the anglers to capture bass and enjoy it.
I know that that hunting numbers have gone down in the state, and you know, hunting and fishing always happen in the same sentence. Are younger people fishing at the rates that that our forebears were?
Ah, what a good question. Here's what I can tell you. I can tell you that I've seen data on the fishing license sales every year from 2000 until 2013. And over that 13-year time period, the highest license sales were in 2000, about 1,400,000. In 2013, it was down by a bit over 100,000. There appears over that time period to be somewhat of a trend of declining license sales, but clearly it's not some precipitous fall. The data that I've seen don't allow us to determine whether it's young people or older individuals who are buying those licenses. So I have heard that as a concern, but I can't absolutely validate it. But that's why there are efforts to, you know, reach out to young anglers, to reach out to urban anglers, et cetera, and help them become invested or experience fishing and decide if they'd like to make it a habit.
As someone myself who's a female in an almost completely male, not as much, but when I started out, it was almost completely a male field. And you're working in, I mean, there's a reason everybody says fishermen. You're an expert on you know, one of the state's biggest game fish, and you're a woman. What drew you to this?
What drew it to me was a childhood of enjoying the outdoors and family vacations to the outdoors with a little bit of fishing, but not lots. So I'm a little out of the ordinary in my field in many ways. And one is that I didn't come to this field so much through fishing. Based on my interests, I became a biology and ecology major as an undergrad, and I took a summer field course in Michigan's Upper Peninsula on aquatic ecology, and I loved it. So that sealed me on aquatic ecology, and my first experience was in water quality, and that was in nutrients, and that was very interesting, but it just seemed like, well, gosh, I ought to know about fish, too, and fish seem really cool. So I went into fisheries somewhat naive to the challenges of being a woman in fisheries, and I'm stubborn. And that said, I have to be very careful here. I honestly think it is difficult, and I would love to sit down and talk about that. That said, I also have some phenomenal male colleagues, and life is a balance of those two things. But I can't imagine getting by without my amazingly fabulous female colleagues.
Dr. Mary Tate Bremgen, thank you so much.
You are very welcome. Thank you.